This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
At the press conference, SEMCO said that the results published yesterday by the Electoral Commission in extenso, making Félix Tshisekedi the winner, did not match what they came up with.
That's reporter Anastasie Toudias in Kinshasa. We'll have the latest on the DRC presidential election coming up.
Also, the United Nations, it says fighting between Nigerian forces and Islamic rebel factions has displaced some 30,000 people in northeast Borno State and created a humanitarian disaster.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
A prominent church group in the DRC, the Catholic Bishops National Episcopal Conference of the Congo, SENCO, told a news conference today that their election results show a different winner of the presidential election than the one announced by the Electoral Commission. Opposition leader Félix Tshisekedi was announced the winner last night with 38.57% of the vote, more than 7 million votes over Martin Fayulu, another opposition candidate. The hand-picked candidate of President Joseph Kabila, Emmanuel Ramzani Shadari, came in with about 4.4 million votes. Our colleague Anastasie Toudias covered the press conference and spoke with me about what was said today about the election results.
At the press conference, the SENCO said that the results published yesterday by the Electoral Commission, in extenso making Félix Tshisekedi the winner, did not match what they came up with, their counting of the vote. So there has been quite a movement in the room when they declared that. And also, we have learned that in three or four different places in Kinshasa, popular places, there have been fights between UDPS youth and Lamuka youth, the two being the main opposition party.
So who did they say would be, according to their tally, should be the winner?
Well, that's the thing. They didn't say anything. They said that that was not their role. Their role was to say that what was said was not the truth, but they would keep the name to themselves because they gave the numbers and the name to the CENI, and they refused to give the name because they think that that is not their role.
What are the other candidates saying about this?
Well, today is a press conference galore. There is a press conference with Lamuka in a few minutes. At the same time, there will be a press conference from the FCC, the majority party. And at 4:30, there will be a press conference with Etienne Félix Tshisekedi. UDPS will organize a press conference as well. Each of them will express themselves today.
Now, you mentioned earlier that there were fights that were breaking out among youths there. What are they fighting about?
They are fighting about their candidates and the fact that each camp is declaring that their candidate won.
So then what is going to happen? What is your expectation as time goes on?
It's very hard to say so far. But one thing is for sure, Martin Fayulu, who declared that, you know, he didn't recognize that Etienne Tshisekedi was the winner, has 48 hours to send a request to the Constitutional Court. And the Constitutional Court has 8 days to decide whether or not Martin Fayulu's request is right.
That was our colleague Anastasie Toudias in Kinshasa.
Mozambique's former finance minister Manuel Chang is one of several dozen people now implicated on both sides of the Atlantic in a case that has led the coastal nation to suffer a debt crisis so severe it has deprived citizens of essential services like road and hospital maintenance. This case spans four continents, Africa, North America, Europe, and Asia, and encompasses a growing list of suspects. Manuel Chang is being held in South African jail under an arrest warrant and from the United States. To brief us on the matter, we have in studio Amancio Miguel from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. Welcome to Africa News Tonight. Give us a little background on this case, Amancio, which happened in Mozambique, but was the finance minister was arrested in South Africa.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. What happened is like 4 or 5 years ago, Manuel Chang and other members of the government of Mozambique, they went on to get $2.2 billion from the Credit Suisse, saying they're going to create companies to protect Mozambique's coast and also for tuna fishing. It was found out later that this was all a fabrication, and they got the money from the Credit Suisse and they shared the money among themselves. So 2 weeks ago, actually on the 29th of December, Manuel Chang was detained in South Africa on his way to Arab Emirates, and he has been held in South Africa for those charged. He is wanted in the USA to face the court. And as you say, this situation has created tremendous financial problems for Mozambicans. And actually now many people in Maputo, which is the capital, and other parts of the country, they are celebrating and hailing the U.S. for sending this arrest warrant against Manuel Chang. It's said that Manuel Chang at least got, or he pocketed like at least $12 million, and other members of the government and his political party, which is Frelimo, is now the ruling party, they also got their share out of this money, which was taken on these secret loans from the Credit Suisse, and this company never really existed in reality. So today in Johannesburg, the court has just like stopped the negotiation. They're gonna resume next week on the 18th, but this time to deal with the bail issue. Like, are they gonna give him bail so that he can respond while he's free or not? But experts say it's unlikely that will happen. And at the same time, after many years of silence, after the U.S. issued this warrant, this week Mozambican government comes now and says they have the names of at least 17 people accused in this case. And it has been said that one of the persons implicated in this case is actually Manuel Chang, who was then the finance minister in the government, in the administration of Mr. Armando Guebuza.
And as this scandal unravels, could Mozambique's former president, Armando Guebuza, and the current president, Filipe Nuis, who was a defense minister at that time of the loans, could they be implicated?
It's still unclear at this stage, because if you see the names that the Mozambique's Attorney General released today, at least in the main paper in Mozambique, it does not indicate the names of Armando Guebuza or Mr. Jacinto Nunes, who was then the Minister of Defense. And he has another background issue. When they went on to get this money, they said some of the money was for coastal protection, and this falls under the Minister of Internal Affairs and also Minister of Defense, and Mr. Nyusi was then the Minister of Defense. So many people and also analysts say this, it's very likely that Mr. Nyusi and Mr. Guebuza were implicated in this process. But at this time, also from the U.S. Indiction, their names are not mentioned there. And in the names that the Mozambique's Attorney General released today, the only high-profile personality who appears here is the former governor of Mozambique Central Bank, Mr. Ernesto Gulf. But, you know, investigation is still going on. We wait and see what will happen. People in Mozambique believe that Mr. Gebuza was implicated because they believe that Mr. Chang could not alone just go and get $2 billion from Credit Suisse without authorization from the president. But the papers that we get from the U.S. and also from Mozambican government, at this time, they do not name these two personalities.
And there was a little crowd that went to the American embassy today.
Yes. Yes, there was a little crowd, members of the third major party, which Movimento Democrático de Mozambique, Mozambique Democratic Movement. They made it to the streets, and then they went to the American embassy to hand a letter thanking the American government for taking the lead in this process and arresting Mr. Mr. Chang, who is the former finance minister and also an acting member of Mozambican parliament. And just as a matter of case, we spoke today, our Portuguese service, with the speaker of Mozambican parliament. She did not say, she did not condemn the case. She just asked for the authorities to follow the law, considering that Mr. Chang is a member of the parliament.
That was Amancio Miguel Vila Culoz from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
The United Nations says fighting between Nigerian forces and Islamic rebel factions has displaced some 30,000 people in northeast Borno State and created a humanitarian disaster. The Islamist groups Boko Haram and Islamic State in West Africa have dramatically increased their activities ahead of next month's presidential election. The government says drones have been used to attack military bases. The UN says the fighting has also forced 260 aid workers to leave the area in what it called the largest withdrawal of aid workers since the international humanitarian response scaled up in 2016. The UN said most of the displaced have come from Baga, near the border with Chad, ending up in already overcrowded camps in Mangunu and Maiduguri. The UN said tens of thousands of people need aid in Mangunu, notably shelter, food, water, and sanitation.
Doctors in Zimbabwe have ended their 40-day strike for better pay and working conditions. The strike has crippled hospitals and left patients across the country unable to find medical care. Reporter Kudzai Zenawashi in Harare has been following the story, and he tells our colleague Kate Pound-Dawson that very little has changed with the end of the walkout.
The agreements that they settled for, they're non-existent. Their promises have been made, but there isn't anything tangible. One of their key issues that they were calling for was the issue of remuneration. They wanted to be paid in U.S. dollars. As you are aware that our inflation is rising and our surrogate currency isn't doing very well, but they didn't get that. Rather, they got a promise. And one key thing that may have been a win for them is government has assured them that they will stock medicine and equipment in hospitals.
How many doctors are going back? Is everybody going to go back to work?
Well, yes. Everyone is going back to work in the public hospitals. But they are not going there with a happy face. They are not smiling. The statement they issued in the early hours of today, they say they are going back to work begrudgingly and hoping that the promises that have been made will be delivered.
Does this affect plan labor action by teachers and other worker groups?
It kind of has an effect to it, but knowing teachers, they'll stick to their cause until their issues have been directly addressed as well, just as the issue with doctors has been. And also maybe you may want to know that government has also has been deliberating on how better they can counter offer the civil servants, and they decided that they'll be adding 10%, a salary increase of 10%, which will come into effect sometime in April.
Now, there have been strikes in the last couple of years by doctors and nurses over pay issues and over the problems with getting supplies, medicines, and other supplies into the hospitals and clinics. Has anything actually improved? Has the government come through on any promises?
Well, it usually gets a bit better after the strikes, after the talks and that doctors or nurses go back to work. Things seem to stabilize, and then they get worse just as they have been in the past. So that has become a trend where there are no permanent solutions that have been initiated. Rather, it's just a facade that is implemented to entice people to go back to work, and then everything goes back to normal.
So we may see some more strikes then in the coming months.
Possibly we may see more strikes, because even the doctors, they are going back now. They are going back to work, but they are saying they are going back begrudgingly, and they are not happy. So until the promises that were made this time around are met, and there is also dialogue regarding their payments, salaries, and working conditions, then definitely we may see more industrial action in the coming months.
That was journalist Kudzai Zenawashi in Harare talking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
Here's a recap of our top stories. Opposition leader in the DRC, Felix Tshisekedi, was announced the winner last night with 38.57% of the vote, more than 7 million votes over Martin Fayulu, another opposition candidate. And the United Nations says fighting between Nigerian forces and the Islamic rebel factions has displaced some 30,000 people in northeastern Borno state and created a humanitarian disaster. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The first witness to appear before the Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparation Commission has called on the government to institute what he calls strict governance reforms that would discourage coups, corruption, tribalism, nepotism and mediocrity. Former Deputy Inspector General of Police Ebrima Chongen says the Gambia should learn from neighboring Senegal, where the military has never attempted to overthrow the government. Reporter Pandari Mbai reports.
Ebrima Chongen spent hours before the Truth and Reconciliation Commission testifying about the torture he suffered. Chongen, a lawyer and former Deputy Inspector General of Gambia's police force, said he spent more than 2 years behind bars under horrible conditions. His crime was putting up a resistance when some young army lieutenants led by Yahya Jammeh overthrew the administration of Sir Dawda Kariba Jawara in July 1994.
I am happy to wear the badge of honor to have been tortured, abused, victimized for defending the constitution of my motherland, the Gambia. I remain ready to put my life on the line for my homeland and let justice guide our action. I hope by this narration, the government and the Gambian people will learn some lessons that can help us to avoid committing the same mistake from the past.
Chongen, who now works for the British Home Office, published a book about his experience, The Price of Duty, 994 Days in the Gambian Junta's Dungeon. He recounted the mistreatment he suffered in the hands of President Yahya Jammeh's security agents.
I go through my ordeal not to solicit pity from my fellow citizens, but to show Gambians the callous nature of the Yahya Jammeh regime and how sticking to the truth and one's principle will eventually pay off.
Chongan was dismissed from the police a few days after the 1994 coup and lost his pension.
One thing I am respectfully submitting to the commission, I request the government to retire me honorably. I have no interest in putting up uniform anymore, but I am requesting that I should be retired honorably and paid my dues, because most of my colleagues who abdicated their responsibility and followed illegality, they have been paid their dues.
Chongan says he went into exile for fear for his safety. He says he is ready to forgive his oppressors.
I have forgiven everybody who has wronged me. I don't have any rancor or anything. I have moved on. I have educated myself. I have a job and I'm moving on with my life. But I think it was important to explain what happened.
The commission, which began hearings this week, has been given a 2-year operational mandate. It is expected to hear testimony from scores of victims and those accused of committing abuses. Lamin Cisse is a former United Nations official, is its head.
Mr. Chongan, you're wonderful. You did very well. You responded to our call pursuant to the Act of Parliament or the National Assembly. We provide victims, I'm quoting from Section 13, Little Roman C, provide them our victims an opportunity to relate their own accounts of violations and abuses they must suffer.
The man at the center of the commission's inquiries, Jammeh, lives in exile in Equatorial Guinea. He lost an election in 2016 and eventually was persuaded to give up office and leave the country in January 2017. Jammeh has been accused of committing a wide range of atrocities during his 22 years rule. He is barred from entering the United States because of accusations of corruption and rights violations against him. For VOA Africa, this is Pan Derimbai reporting.
As many as 3 protesters were killed yesterday in Sudan after police broke up anti-government demonstrations in the city of Omdurman. Police used tear gas and gunfire to disperse the protesters. Thousands had gathered in Omdurman to counter a large rally in support of President Omar al-Bashir in nearby Khartoum. At that rally, he blamed unspecified foreign enemies for 3 weeks of protests demanding his resignation. But the man who has run the country since a coup 30 years ago said the only way to remove him is at the ballot box. Protests began around the country on December 19th after the government tripled the bread prices in a country already struggling with shortages of foreign currency and high inflation. The government says about 22 people have died since then, while human rights groups put the death toll at twice that many. More than 800 people have been arrested since the unrest began. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 8:16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shaogun Chang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Looking for something? Headline news? Interviews analysis. We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.